Your go.
Okay. This is the regular September 9th, 2020 Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting, San Diego Region 9. Is Roger? There's Roger. Oh. Roger, did you want to say a few words about how to participate in remote meetings? Is that?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So good morning. My name is Roger Mitchell. I'm a senior, or I'm actually a supervising engineering geologist with the San Diego Water Board. Today, I'm serving as the remote meeting coordinator and would like to share some instructions on how to participate in today's virtual board meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment during the public forum or during one of the board agenda items, you must be signed into the Zoom webinar or be participating by phone. If you are currently watching the webcast on calspan.org and you want to comment on an agenda item, you will need to register to sign into the Zoom webinar or call into the meeting. Information on how to participate can be found on the San Diego Water Board meeting agenda website. The public comments will be accepted. Public comments will be accepted for each item after all presentations for the item are complete. If you wish to speak on an item, please virtually raise your hand. If you are using a computer or tablet, use the raise hand button in Zoom. If you are calling into Zoom, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Please use the raise your hand feature to let the board know you wish to speak, even if you previously registered and indicated that you wish to speak on an item. If you do not raise your hand, we will assume you no longer wish to speak. When public comments start on an item, the commenter order will be determined by the order each person raised their hand. I will call on each commenter by name, or if you are on the phone, I will call the last three digits of your phone number. And then I will unmute each person when it is their turn to speak. Please note, you will not appear by video during your testimony. There is a 3-minute time limit for each public commenter. However, time could be extended at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen for those calling in by phone. We will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. I would like to remind everyone participating in the board meeting today to state your name for the record before you speak, and please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3676 or email it@agpvideo.com. Thank you.
Okay. Chris, would you... call the forum.
Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Gentu? Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
Ms. Warren?
Here.
Dr. Barbanel?
Here. All right. We have the instructions for the public forum, as given by Roger. Roger, do we have any, or Chris, do we have any speakers to speak on an item not on the agenda?
We have two, at least, maybe three.
Okay.
First, we have 367.
All right.
Let's see.
Muted, I think.
Good morning. Is this working?
Yes, it is.
Yes, thank you. Mike Beenan, Laguna Blue Belt Coalition.
We are seeking an immediate cease and desist order be issued to the County of Orange and the City of Laguna Beach for unpermitted discharge at Aliso Beach here in Laguna Beach. No board member would swim in these polluted waters or allow their children to, quote, recreate in Aliso Beach. This is a daily pollution event, and the staff is making no distinction between dry weather, concentrated flows of urban runoff to a popular beach versus stormwater discharges that are diluted and no one's at the beach. The reluctance of staff to investigate and cease these illegal discharges by skimboarders digging out the natural beach sand berm makes a laughingstock of the board and California's commitment to protect water quality and natural resources. The county must have a permit and test water quality to open up the beach sand berm. When the skimboarders do it, it's a free-for-all, like Burning Man. The community of South Laguna has spent 30 years trying to educate the regional board about the damage of urban pollution to coastal waters. In the intervening time in 1999, there was only one cleanup and abatement order issued against Laguna Niguel. Concern for the disadvantaged community also rings hollow since large portions of the 6 million visitors to Laguna Beach come to Aliso and are from the regional disadvantaged communities. These individuals must recreate in polluted waters. Recently, before Labor Day, the berm was illegally breached and the beach was closed. Staff is offering a circular logic. Since breaching by vandals doesn't require a permit, the staff conclude that they don't need a permit. Once again, we are asking that the board fulfill its commitment to protect coastal receiving waters and investigate and issue a cease and desist order against anyone breaching the berm. We don't need to call in Colombo to investigate. There are YouTube videos that you can click on. Just enter Aliso Standing Wave, and you can watch the vandals doing their damage to our community. Thank you very much for the opportunity to alert the board once again to the ongoing pollution of Aliso Beach.
Thank you, Mr. Beenan. Are you still on the line?
It looks like he's still, he's muted. Okay.
Yes, I'm unmuted.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that you heard the board members' questions. Mr. Gibson, I gather that this is not a new issue to you and your staff.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. No, this is not a new issue, and we have discussed this on many occasions with Mr. Beenan and the community. The Water Board has taken a number of important actions with regard to bacterial indicators, the key constituent of concern, including adopting total maximum daily loads and adopting a regional stormwater permit that includes bacterial indicators in this watershed as one of their top priorities. In this instance, the activities are those of the public recreating on the beach, and they are, in fact, outside of the Water Board's jurisdiction. They are within the authority of the Parks Department of Orange County. And in this case, what I would suggest is an official letter from the Water Board to County of Orange and to Mr. Beenan explaining what we can and can't do and advising them on how the quality of the water on the beach should be protected in terms of regulating activities of people on the beach, which, although it's outside of our purview, it is within County Parks purview in Orange County. That is really the appropriate response. In the meantime, we continue to implement the total maximum daily load, which includes dry weather targets, which are due this next year, and also the water quality improvement plan for the watershed, which addressed the sources of the impairment to the creek. So that is my recommendation in terms of responding. We care deeply about the quality of the waters. I've recreated there at the beach myself, although it's a bit of a drive from my house. It's important to us that we able to achieve the enjoyment of those recreational beneficial uses. But the authorities of the Water Board are best applied upstream at the sources through the TMDL and through the permit.
Are there any questions from board members of either Mr. Gibson or Mr. Beenan?
I have a question for Mr. Gibson. assuming that Parks and Rec from the County of Orange takes over this issue, or have we familiarized ourselves at all with the penalties that might be levied upon the members of the public interfering with what appears to be stormwater management tools?
I don't know what those are, but that can also be one of the purposes of our letter to request what actions and what means they have to assure compliance.
I think that would be helpful for the board to better understand. Thank you.
Other questions of Dave? Dave, can you or your staff prepare a brief letter to Orange County and in particular to the Parks and Rec Department? Indicating that they have this problem. It's their responsibility. And can we copy Mr. Beenan? Would that be within the authority of the board?
Absolutely, in both instances.
Okay. Mr. Beenan, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. I realize that you've been doing it for a while and you must be very frustrated. And we, as explained, the direct responsibility is Orange County and its divisions or branches, whatever it calls Parks and Rec. Would you do us the favor of, well, receiving and reading the letter that Mr. Gibson and his staff prepare? And if you're not satisfied, please come back and we'll see whether there's more we can do to speak to Orange County authorities.
Thank you. Thank you very much for addressing this. And I just want to remind the board that the creek, in addition to bacteria problems, is 303D for toxicity, phosphorus, nitrogen, and other contaminants. We really appreciate you taking this issue seriously, and I appreciate the staff's work. We've been working very, very diligently with inland cities and the water districts to reduce the flows into the creek. And this is sort of the last frontier, if you will, for protecting the ocean. So once again, I thank you for taking this issue seriously.
Okay. Well, let's hope it's effective. It's not that I don't want to hear from you again, because we'd like to hear you to come back and say the problem is being addressed and if not totally solved, Orange County is working on it. But if you're not happy, please come back and keep us apprised of, and maybe we can figure out some other action. But right now,
yes,
that's what we're going to do. And as I said, I hope it works well for you.
Yes, thank you. And be assured this is not one or two individuals that are concerned about this. We've met with Surfrider, the major Sierra Club, major environmental groups, and we're sort of stymied on how to move forward. And I think your letter will be a great step in the right direction. So thank you very much.
Of course. Okay. That was the first of seven speakers. Is that correct? Can we go on to number two?
Currently, we don't have anyone else raising their hand at this time. If you wish to speak, please go ahead and raise your hand.
That wasn't exactly overwhelming.
Well, there are actually two people with their hands raised, Roger.
Oh, yes. Okay.
We have two hands. First will be Craig Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
And just working to get his audio unmuted.
Thank you.
I think I found the right button. Can anyone hear me?
We can hear you, Mr. Carlisle.
Thank you. And Chairman and board members, thank you for this opportunity. Thanks for you, Roger. I was hoping to talk to you today as a private citizen about my concerns regarding beach erosion and sand replenishment. However, because of what has transpired in the last 24 hours, I'm now, I think, primarily speaking to you as a very concerned senior engineering geologist with over 20 years experience in the office who is very concerned about public access to the board based on my very disconcerting experience in the last 24 hours. At noon yesterday, I submitted exactly what I planned to show, which was just simply three photos, which I provided in a PDF and in a PowerPoint to Chris, the clerk of the board, and she immediately replied. And I also copied the executive officer and a few others because I didn't want to surprise any of my coworkers that showed what I planned to present. I asked how the logistics would work about how to handle the PowerPoint remotely, and I see it's working now. And how will the PDF be provided to the board? I never got a response until less than an hour ago about those questions. I also registered online and promptly received a confirmation from the clerk, but not an answer about the PowerPoint and the PDF. The rest of the day, I was awaiting instructions and answers, and there was no response until after 4 p.m. yesterday, when Catherine, attorney for the board, sent me a response that confused me, especially the statement that, quote, it was unclear from my slides, which had three figures, whether you intend to comment on concerns with the existing permit provisions, propriety of the discharge, discharge volumes, and so forth. I was confused because everything I planned to present was provided in both the PowerPoint and the PDF. I emailed back immediately for more clarifications and started wondering about what if I was someone from the public with less experience with the system? I believe they would have given up sooner and thus not felt comfortable trying to convey their concerns to the board. Not wanting to give up, though, I'm not that way, not wanting to give up and still unsure of what was allowed and what wasn't going to be allowed, despite increasing frustration throughout the rest of the day yesterday and into today, I forged ahead and asked for more clarification and received more replies from Catherine, who was, for the record, very promptly trying to reply and answer my questions, but I'm not an attorney. And the nuances were lost on me, and I suspect lost on the majority of us non-legally trained people. It wasn't until a few minutes ago, less than an hour ago, before the start of the meeting, that I received instructions about showing the PowerPoint, how they would be handled, and was still not sure which slides could and could not be presented. And again, there's only three slides.
So, Mr. Carlisle, I'm really sorry that you had this, I don't know whether to call it a technical
problem. I'm sorry, I wasn't quite finished, Chairman.
But I don't want you to waste your 3 minutes and not talk to us about the problem.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk to the problem, and let me just wrap it up and then maybe somebody can tell me. Can we open the PowerPoint and move to the second slide to make sure I don't violate direction from Catherine? Roger, please.
Yes.
I think he briefly showed you the first slide that may be the problem. I don't really know.
We have seen the first slide.
Okay. Well, if we can move to the second, but I'm pretty sure.
No. Let's do all three so that we have a consistent picture of what the issue is.
Yeah, I can't see any of them right now.
Right.
Roger's trying to bring them up.
Thanks. I'm trying to work on this.
Okay. Okay.
So we can move to the second in case the first one is problematic, but that's a foot of erosion.
And where is this erosion?
Yeah, twice a day up to a foot of erosion occurs as the tide comes in, fills it in, and it gets erosion. Let's go to the second slide so I don't get cut off and violated.
You guys probably know
this is the Army Corps of Engineers database about the cost and magnitude of sand erosion projects just in our region. This is a statewide database and well over $50 million. One of the projects in Oceanside, the next slide, was $41 million and change to replenish our beaches. So I think just these three slides have shown It's a big concern, and it's an expensive concern. I won't get into the territory I'm afraid I shouldn't get into. But in closing, as I explained, I've decided not to dive any more detail into the specifics of where this beach erosion is that is ongoing. And again, it happens every day from multiple discharges and the associated high cost of beach replenishment. But I just want to point out that as a long-term employee of the board, I'm discouraged by how difficult and frustrating and confusing it was to attempt to address the board today, and actually would be very embarrassed for our agency if a member of the public with less experience faced similar roadblocks. And regarding the beach erosion and to avoid getting into unallowed territory, are there any examples of the water board taking action to address areas with discharge creating serious sand erosion? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dave, do you want to say a few words to Mr. Carlisle?
Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Carlisle has spoken on several occasions with regard to his concerns with the discharge from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography Aquariums on La Jolla Shores Beach. As he knows and has been told, Scripps has submitted its report of waste discharge to the board on July 2nd, and that makes this a pending matter. We do not allow public testimony on matters that are pending before the board until it's a formally noticed hearing. In this case, it was not clear from his slides what he intended to say exactly about the discharge, except that it is causing a condition of erosion temporarily on the beach. This is not a new situation. This has been going on at that beach for many decades, and it is within the board's purview to address this when the MPDS permit comes back. The permit expires at the end of this year, and we do anticipate it bringing it to the board, at which time we'll allow full public testimony on any aspect of that permit that the board can consider, including beach erosion. That is the time and the place to raise these types of issues and the manner in which to raise them. Mr. Carlisle is expressing frustration because he's been told that he has to follow the same rules as everyone else from the public, even though he enjoys a privileged position as a member of the senior staff of the Water Board. So that is the whole of this issue right now. And when we are able to, we will release a public draft of that permit, and he will be entitled to submit his comments as a private citizen on it and testify before the board when it hears this matter.
The aquarium at Scripps been made aware of this issue?
I don't know what we have communicated to the aquarium, but that is, again, one of the issues that we would want to address in the public process.
Okay.
I raised my hand again.
I would advise, Mr. Chair, that there be no further discussion regarding the Scripps permit because it is a pending matter. I advised Mr. Carlisle of that last night and indicated that the appropriate forum for him to submit his comments is, as Mr. Gibson just indicated, through the public process. He could submit his comments now for inclusion, and then again when the matter is open for public comment once the draft permit is released. But the agenda is quite clear that there should be no comment on pending matters during public forum, and I'll follow up again with Mr. Carlisle to discuss this further, but my understanding that I gleaned from our email exchanges last night and this morning was that he was going to be intended to talk about the Scripps permit, and so I advised that he should avoid doing that during the public forum, and I think we should cease talking about the particular circumstances at Scripps at this time.
Well, are there any comments from board members? So I have no doubt about the rules, but I'm also concerned about the discharge and whether Scripps being aware of it could put an end to it, if they can. I don't know whether it's physically possible.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that the Scripps is not present and not able to speak to this issue, and I would recommend that you ask your staff to discuss the matter if you wish, but that you not have further discussion during this board meeting regarding that matter.
Okay. In that case, we will hear from Mr. Carlisle from Scripps and any other parties at the appropriate time, which Dave says is approximately 3 months from now. Is that right? End of the year?
Yeah, permit is expired at the end of the year, and the staff are putting together their work plan for the coming year's work. I don't anticipate that that permit will be before the board in 3 months, perhaps 6 to 9 months, depending on the priority. In the meantime, we're going to be working on the International Boundary and Water Commission permit. That's going to be an interesting project. The two SOCWA permits and another permit. So this is not the highest priority, but we can absolutely take your concerns into consideration, Mr. Chair, as you indicate them, and raise the issue internally in terms of the erosion and address the issue with the draft permit when we are able to produce one.
Okay. I think that's the will be the end of this discussion. Are there other public speakers? Chris or Roger?
Yes, there is.
One more.
Mr. Okay. Neil Moore.
Good morning, it's Neil Moore, General Manager for Republic Services, Sycamore Landfill, Chairman Arbinol, board members, Director Gibson and staff, thank you for the opportunity to address you. I just signed up early this morning and the process seemed to work pretty well, so I appreciate that. What I'd like to do is, you've seen me before talk about the Sycamore Landfill project. And we have another cell construction project that is ongoing right now. And our synthetic liner system is going to be installed starting September 14th and for about a 2 month process. So as always, I would like to invite any of the board members and staff out for a tour of the landfill. I know this has been very difficult during the pandemic. And so if we could set numbers of 1-2 at a time, I'd certainly accommodate that. And if that doesn't materialize, what I thought I might do is take some ongoing photos through the process and possibly get on an agenda item and address the board through a video show. But as always, I would enjoy having someone of the board out to see the Sycamore Landfill project and see how we're protecting groundwater, stormwater, and producing energy. So I will get specifics on the my contact information to Roger, and he can forward that to the board members. So again, thank you all for your work making these meetings accessible, and I really had no problem. So just want to commend the board and the staff on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. I think all of us remember who you are, even though you're presently blanked out. And Betty, you had a question of Mr. Moore?
Yes, I'd like to thank you very much for your kind invitation. I know that we're contemplating trying to use Zoom where people show us a site. And it might be very instructive to have you see how that works. And Celeste Cantu is in charge of this project for the board, looking at innovative technology. So this is something we're exploring. I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, but I'll let Celeste take it the rest of the way. Thanks, Celeste.
Thank you, Betty.
Thank you, Dr. Olson. Yes, we are exploring alternative technologies and innovations that kind of bridge the gap during this COVID time, and also watching and seeing that our staff are particularly stretched thin, given reductions in budgets and needs to dedicate staff to contact tracing, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd love to have you, Mr. Moore, as a lab to help us explore the limits of the functionality of this. Thank you.
Sure. And I think really what you meant was you'd like me to be a guinea pig. So, but I would very welcome to try that. We might not be able to do it live because I don't have great coverage in the canyon, but we could maybe do some videos and show them on a Zoom meeting and then answer questions and have some other slides we can go to. So I would definitely welcome that opportunity.
Okay. Well, if people want to volunteer to go during the pandemic, good luck. Okay. But to take if videos and have a video presentation via Zoom, I think is technically feasible and should be relatively easy. So if Celeste, if you and Betty, I think who else is involved with that? Gary, is it? Can sort of tell Mr. Moore what we'd like to see and have his staff take the video. We can certainly present it in this public forum. And we don't call the public guinea pigs generally, but thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the time.
Okay. Now, thank you for the offer. All right. Does that wrap up the public comment?
Board Chair Barbanel.
Yes, Roger.
Mr. Carlisle has raised his hand again. And it's up to your discretion if you want to hear from him again.
If he can contribute information under the instructions that we all just received as well, basically not to be able to comment on it, that would be fine. So, Craig, did you want to speak?
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
I just wanted to say I didn't hear an answer when Gibson summed up the stuff I can't talk about. I didn't hear anything really addressing my concerns about public access being so difficult. I raised my hand right when somewhat summarized, misstated what I was trying to talk about. The other aspect that had absolutely nothing to do with anything but public access difficulties. And so I just wanted to point that out, that that was my other concern that is clearly not a pending item. And I'd like it to be a pending item. Is I realize, and I think Chris and Catherine and Gibson and everybody is doing the best they can, but I thought it was useful feedback about how painful and difficult it was for an experienced person to access the board and comment during the public forum. Again, it wasn't until less than an hour prior to the meeting that I found out that my previously submitted document of only 3 slides was going to be shown or not and how it would be handled. Thank you.
Yes. Well, I'll take the blame for not seeing your raised hands, but I don't see the raised hands. I don't know who exactly does, whether it's Roger for AGP, but if you will have the patience that board members are also trying to have with the medium that we can employ in these discussions, I can only say thank you, but I think we have to move on. And your point is heard and taken. Thank you. Okay. Is that the full complement of public speakers?
I don't see any other speakers at this time, Chair.
Very good. Then we'll move on. What for me, having copied it off the website, is the second page one. And we'll move into board business. Item number one is the adoption or the consideration of the adoption of the board meeting minutes from August 12th. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the minutes of August 12th as presented.
We have a second. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Eric, are you?
I'm just trying to unmute.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were waving your hand.
I don't want to
be missing it after these statements I've made. Okay, I guess, Chris, can you call the roll?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay. We are now on item number two, in which we have first reports from the chair. Chair has no reports. from board members, is there any board member who wants to make a report or comment or information on any items that have occurred? Celeste? Oh, I saw your raised hand, but it wasn't electronic.
just briefly, Dr. Olson and I continue to meet on the next generation monitoring efforts, a subcommittee created by our chair. We've interviewed many different people from various aspects of our work. We've learned a lot. We have, I believe, one more interview to do, and we'll be able to start wrapping it up. We've been encouraged with what we've learned, and we think it's going to be helpful to our staff and helpful to getting our work done. So that's just a small update in the meantime. Thank you.
Great. I am much appreciative of your work, and I suspect it will also apply to all of the other regions and the state board, if only as an example during these times and an action item as we recover from the pandemic.
Hopefully. Mr. Chair, I do have one other brief announcement. We met verbally yesterday with the members of the state board and staff regarding planning the WQCC that you will all be invited to at the end of October. The staff in Sacramento are very hard at work to plan a two-day interactive process that would be interesting and informative to all of us. So please stay tuned for an exciting agenda. Thank you.
Okay. And that's October 27th and 29th, as I recall.
I believe that's correct off the top of my head.
That sounds like a good segue to our state board liaison. How are you, Laurel? Welcome. Hey. I don't know where you are, but welcome to San Diego.
Yes, thank you. Great, thanks. Happy to be here and see you all. So a few updates from the state board. We had to cancel our drinking water distribution operator certification exam. And this is unfortunately a continued problem we have with our operator certification program, which has been up until now all in person, exams with proctors and such. And so actually at our next board meeting next week, we are considering an emergency contract to try to get the operator certification program converted to computer-based and available for testing and certification in January of next year. So you would think we would be able to do that, but we haven't until now. And so we're excited to jumpstart that and make that available. That's something that's really vital for both drinking water and wastewater. We have also, just coming up next week at our board meeting, we have an update and technical presentation by our staff on the ongoing PFAS investigation. So that's not going to be any kind of action, but if folks are interested to tune in, we will be getting an update and presentation on that effort. We'll also be considering the next year's water quality and water rights fees. So that's always a challenging topic, and especially this year with the economic downturn. So just understanding the challenges to make sure that our programs are funded while not creating undue burdens for our permit holders. We have a urban water supplier reporting tool demonstration webinar that's coming up on September 22nd. So it's a public webinar to basically go over and discuss updates to the urban water supplier reporting tool. So we adopted regulations in April. And so part of the follow-up with that was staff needing to work with water suppliers to ensure that the reporting works well and is streamlined and useful. And, you know, unfortunately, given everything that's going on right now, our Office of Emergency Services is very busy responding to especially the fires right now, particularly for drinking water systems that are impacted by fires. And I would say from what I've heard from our staff is that unfortunately that's gotten pretty routine, and we have a good system in place for being able to respond to that, but it's not easy response and big challenges. And unfortunately, it seems like we're seeing that more and more each year. Just an update that last month in August, we held our Salt and Sea workshop, which we hold annually, and we had to postpone because it was supposed to be in person in March, just as COVID hit. So we held a Salt and Sea workshop to where we had resources agency and many local, regional, state, and even federal agencies presenting on progress around the Salt and Sea, stakeholders, NGOs, community leaders as well. There was a lot of public comment. And just, you know, my takeaway on this is that we're much of the progress on over the past year has been getting resources and staffing in place. And that includes getting positions and hiring significant new staff and actually opening up a remote office in the region near the sea. And doing a lot around getting contracts and easements and agreements in place so that they can move forward quickly. They did complete a small dust mitigation project, but I think they predict that they're on track to be able to get a lot more done by the end of the year. And then we hold annual meetings on this, workshops like this in March of each year. So we should be on track to do that. I know that's in the other region, but I know it's a concern and shared priority here in this region. Similarly, in border updates on the New River, the state is fully funding that project to at least phase one of that project, which is moving the conveying the polluted water away from the backyards of folks in the community of Calexico. It hasn't started yet, but there is a meeting, there's funding, there's DWR is leading, Department of Water Resources is leading development of the project. And so I think that's really kicking off, and water boards and CalEPA are supporting that. And there's a lot of good news around Tijuana River, and you know, I'll leave the specific updates on that to your executive officer, who's really been the leader and our leader, frankly, in this, in terms of making sure that we can support action there, but that there's regional leadership from you all in terms of what's most important and how we move forward. I think with that, those are the things I wanted to mention. And I think, like Celeste said, we're working on WQCC. And I did bring back the comments from last meeting around just trying to make sure that we're working with regional boards and providing some guidance around what does the water resiliency portfolio plan mean for us, and how do we think about that. So I'm not sure exactly how we are doing that, but I know that that's something that the chair and our executive officer heard and are working to figure out how to be responsive. So with that, if there's any other questions, or also if you have topics you want to make sure I bring back for the next meetings, let me know.
Thank you, Laurel. Are there any questions or requests of Laurel? Betty, you look like you have to raise your hand mechanically.
Right, I'm sorry.
So we'll start with Betty.
On how to do that. So, I just have a very quick question, and it's sort of probably I shouldn't be asking it because I could look it up. But you know what the date is on the PFAS and the PFO?
It's actually at our board meeting next week. So it's Tuesday, September 15th. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Eric, did I see you waving your hand? Or are you? No?
No.
Okay. So I have a request. The governor addressing the wildfires, and I appreciate his public notices. I get a lot of public notices and probably will the next few months, as we all will, but I read his. attributes the incidence of wildfires to climate change. I have never seen a scientific document that makes that connection in any way. And I wonder whether the state board can find out from his office what information there is to back that comment and what we should be doing in Region 9, where we've been extraordinarily lucky to have what looked like a kind of minor wildfire in the last week or so. But the other regions, especially, I guess, Region 5 has suffered enormously. So I know this is not, I realize you can't call up the governor and say, hi, this is Laurel. And we're wondering what the climate change connection is. But if we could ask Joaquin or the head of Cal EPA, I'm just curious whether there are any implications for us in that information.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I think it also, I'll follow up on that particular request, but I also think, you know, it would be helpful for us to be continuing to update on just how we're incorporating climate change and thinking about that within our programs at the Water Board in particular. And I know you all have been focused on that and asking around that for a while. But, you know, we did adopt a resolution around climate change a number of years ago. So I think, you know, making sure that we can give updates on that as we think about what that, how we continue to adapt and address that and mitigate that in our programs is something I can work on making sure that I report back to this board and I think we think about as a board in general, but I'll also follow up on your particular request.
Thank you. Other questions? Betty?
Hi, Laurel. I've asked this question a number of times. I'm trying to figure out an answer, particularly because of the hot weather. So I would like to know when you change from, I guess, a less water-conserving palette to a more water-conserving palette, what happens to, how much does evapotranspiration decrease? Mm-hmm. And so I heard anecdotal answers about how it impacts it. I have concerns about the nexus to energy and our energy consumption, and particularly in this hot weather, we've seen that we've had issues with it, and I just have not been able to find, I've been able to find it in the literature, and it says it decreases. I haven't been able to find it in relationship to the state. And this state, I don't know if that's something, maybe you're not the right agency to ask. And of course, it is the state board I have asked, and there's, so if I'm barking up the wrong tree, I need some advice about where to go. So if that's possible.
Yeah, I can definitely follow up on that. Can you just clarify clearer question that I can make sure that I'm following up on, because I heard the question around conservation and evapotranspiration, but is there something, or you can follow up with me over email
I do
in
that
terms of specifics.
Yeah. I would like to do that because then I can think clearly and give you a concise, good question. Thanks, Ed.
Great. Yeah, I'll follow up on that as well. I think it's, you know, whether it's in our purview, it's certainly something that our work around conservation is within the purview of them knowing who is lead on that and at DWR if it's not us. So thanks.
Other questions of Laurel? Eric, are you trying to raise your hand this time?
Yes. Just a quick comment for Betty. The ag community has a system that they use. It's called CEMIS that calculates evapotranspiration throughout the state. It mostly applies to agricultural crops, which actually we haven't switched to as much as the landscape. The landscape portion of that is probably where your question is directed. And I think overall, the landscape portion of evapotranspiration is fairly low statewide as a percentage of what goes on. But there is a system called CEMIS, and it might, I don't know how it exactly applies. I just bring that up.
Yeah, that's helpful. I will, I think maybe one of the things I could do is just see if we could get a quick summary of the conservation, various conservation work that's going on. I think it's hard to track because there are so many different pieces with different agencies and different tools. But I'll follow up with you, Board Member Olson, and figure out how I can make sure I'm responsive to that and get the information. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
Laurel, slightly different topic. From the state level, are we tracking the impact of our lost staff as contract tracers, both in terms of like the work that's not getting accomplished and also just like, for lack of a better way to put it, office morale?
Yeah. So we have an update at each board meeting from our executive officer on COVID response in general, and that often includes our staffing implications. I think that's a good question on the specifics of that. Last update, and I think at this, your executive officer also, I think, has spoken to this earlier, which is that a lot of folks were trained and designated as contact tracers, but haven't necessarily been deployed and taken away from their duties. My update on that is a few months old. So it's a good question. I'll follow up and get a better sense of that.
All right. Thank you so much, Laurel.
Thanks.
If we haven't given you enough extra work, let us know.
That's great.
Try to fill in.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Good to see you all.
Okay. Next item is the executive officer's report. Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'd like to ask if there are any questions on the written report before I provide a verbal update. I'd like to ask you to join me in congratulating Rebecca Stewart of our staff, who after 38 years of professional and dedicated and highly effective services announced her retirement. She will be impossible to replace, and in fact, we'll have to hold her vacancy for some time pending the decision on fees and whether or not we can support the positions going forward. But in the meantime, she has made a difference in her 38 years, and I warmly congratulate her on her retirement. I'd also like to ask you to join me in congratulating Roger Mitchell, our executive producer of today's meeting, on his promotion after 16 years to supervising engineering geologist overseeing the groundwater restoration and protection branch. And I'd like to ask you to join me in welcoming Dan Boyd of our newly appointed to our office as an engineering geologist. Dan, are you with us and able to turn on your camera so we can say hello? We may not have adequately warned him ahead of time of that, but I thought we did. Well, he's joined us and we're very happy to have him. As I just indicated, we're going to likely have to hold on to vacancies now for a while. Hey, Dan.
Oh, hey, good morning. Can you turn on your camera? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I apologize. I don't see where the...
I don't believe that the attendees can share their cameras at this point, Dave.
That's all right. Well, thank you, Dan, and welcome to the board. Anything you'd like to say with us while you're here? I know I put you on the spot, but that's...
No, he's
good training.
There we go. Good morning, everyone, and just want to thank you and tell you how excited I am to be here as a member of this agency. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. As I just indicated, we're going to probably have to hold on to vacancies for quite a while. In addition to the 5% redirection of staff to contact tracing, in addition to the 9.6% reduction in payroll hours, we've been informed that we should be prepared next year for a 5% cut in our budget across the board. And we also don't know what this economy is going to hold for us during the next few months. An important decision is pending before the state board on fees in order to make good the positions that the legislature authorized. But in the meantime, we also have to be able to keep up our work on our day job. And so when we come to the item that I'm going to talk about in a few moments, item number 10, I will indicate where we have, in fact, cut back some of our expectations for the coming year and where we have built in flexibility to try to address the dynamic situation we find ourselves in right now. I'd like to also update you that I attended on your behalf the US EPA roundtable with Administrator Wheeler and Region 9 Administrator John Busterud on the Tijuana River border issues. There, they announced a memorandum of understanding between EPA and International Boundary and Water Commission, or IBWC, to work together to address the short-term transboundary flows that have been occurring all year during this year. So we will be meeting with them, in fact, this afternoon and tomorrow to talk about the technical issues and the legal issues associated with taking perhaps an additional 10 million gallons per day from the Tijuana River in the United States into the International Wastewater Treatment Plant to be treated and then discharged offshore. There are a number of issues associated with that we'll be working through with them. And I met with and talked with Commissioner Jane Harkins to express to her our support for IBWC taking those flows from the river in order to protect downstream communities and ecosystems. And I've identified several manners and several ways in which we can address some of the concerns that they've raised. And I hope that with the next month, I'll be able to report success on the execution of that memorandum of understanding that was at least conceptually laid out to us. I will point out, we did not get to see a copy of the MOU. We did not have a signing ceremony. There were no commemorative pins handed out. So this is a very much a work in progress. But nonetheless, US EPA and the Water Board have been engaged on an almost daily basis during the last 3 months to make this happen, because we have heard very well from Mayor Dedina and others the need to address these short-term transboundary flows while the USMCA process is ongoing and expected to take several years. So the action that we may propose will encompass at least one full year of temporary diversions, and will be designed to address the emergency conditions rather than simply assume responsibility for sanitary sewage in Tijuana. We also heard from Administrator Wheeler support for a project that we have been working on with the County of San Diego and the City of San Diego to develop and implement one of the Senate Bill 507 projects, a sediment basin and trash basin in Smuggler's Gulch, where currently there is nothing in place. This would mirror what is in place in Goat Canyon, as you may have seen on previous tours, and would provide ability to intercept and divert sediment and trash, but also when the basin is maintained, capture and hold renegade flows during the dry season so that they could be captured and removed to the treatment plant rather than allowed to convey downstream to the Tijuana River. This is a significant project out of the Senate Bill 507 list. It's actually two projects. And US EPA has indicated that they're willing to support the local agencies and the Water Board on the development of the project, the environmental analysis and permitting. And we will seek funding for the capital costs from the Proposition 68 bond program administered by the State Coastal Conservancy. I've recently met with them as well, and it looks like the stars are beginning to align on being able to add that element to the border pollution control approach on the Tijuana River. That would remove a significant amount of sediment and trash that you see in many of the photographs that we have of the river. I mentioned earlier that I'll be meeting this afternoon with EPA and IBWC, and that meetings will continue tomorrow. But I also met with Carlos de la Parra of COLEF in Tijuana and Rigoberto Labarón, who is the Undersecretary of Water in Baja, on the Minute 320 work group that Dr. de la Parra asked us to lead for water quality. We discussed setting up a meeting perhaps as early as September 22nd. That may slip, in particular because we'll want to provide for simultaneous translation. But the work group will be reporting to the binational core group, which will be meeting on or about October 28th, about the same time as the WQCC meeting. We identified in our conversation two focal areas to propose to the work group members, which will include agencies in the U.S. and Mexico. One of them is coordination of monitoring efforts. There are several efforts underway or about to start. including the investigative order that we issued to the International Boundary and Water Commission. And there's an opportunity there to realize benefits of binational coordination on monitoring and assessment to identify the conditions and to answer the four basic questions in our monitoring framework, which is what is the conditions of the water? What are the key stressors? What are the sources of those key stressors? And are the management measures that we're implementing, for example, the Senate Bill 507 projects or the USMCA projects, making the difference that we expect them to make? Right now, those efforts occur somewhat haphazardly and in separate directions. And so not unlike what we have done previously in Orange County, we would like to coordinate those monitoring efforts, focus them on some key questions, and be able to be sure that the quality of the data allows it to be compared from one effort to another. The other effort that we're looking at is water recycling in Tijuana. There is an urgent need for additional water supply in Tijuana. As you may remember, they actually were forced to go to rationing last year in November for shortages. There are opportunities with the existing treatment plants to capture and use that water, which is currently discharged to the Tijuana River, and beneficially reuse it. There are several competing proposals. And so Rigoberto Labarón recommended that as being one of the key focal areas for the water quality group. So as those groups begin to meet, I'll be reporting back to you on a periodic basis through the executive officer's report. And if there aren't any other questions, that concludes my report for this month.
Are there questions of Dave? Betty? You have to unmute yourself.
So I just wanted to ask, in the recycling effort, putting in the recycling infrastructure is very, very expensive. So is this like a plan, or is this, are there locations that are very near that it could go to, or?
Yeah, there are several options. And one of the reasons for recommending this as one of the work group's focal points is to identify the projects that have the best yield in terms of cost and that are most practicable and that could be implemented soonest in Tijuana. There is a very different set of requirements and strictures and public process in Tijuana than there is in California. And so the institutional barriers to development of new projects can be significant. But one of the options that we talked about was essentially an indirect potable reuse project in which groundwater could be augmented with the flows from La Marita or Arturo Herrera. And then that water could be extracted and stored behind Rodriguez Reservoir for use later on. The other project is to direct those flows over the hill to the Valley of Guadalupe to be used for irrigation. There are other proposals as well that we think will come out. But we can develop these and begin preparing them for consideration by the U.S. EPA for their Border Water Improvement Program or the North American Development Bank for their long-term funding of infrastructure for water and wastewater recycling in Tijuana. So these are really conceptual ideas that we want to advance to the binational core group. And the binational core group, California is represented by the Undersecretary Yana Garcia of Cal EPA. And so we'll be also coordinating with her so that she goes to those meetings prepared to articulate our concerns for transboundary water pollution issues, as well as the opportunities to realize meaningful projects in Tijuana that provide for multiple uses, including water supply in Tijuana.
I just think it's a wonderful idea, but I just know that it's expensive to even get minimal transport pipes in the ground. The other question is, are there sinking basins to recharge natural sinking basins that you'd be able to recharge with? Or
I'm not aware of any. The groundwater levels are fairly high, and groundwater has not been used extensively in the Tijuana River Valley or, I believe, in Tijuana. But those are things that can be changed in terms of providing water supply for Tijuana.
I think that's great. Thank you.
Eric?
Dave, I want to compliment you. I did hear an interview with the EPA administrator, and he sounded like he was just you talking about, he was excited about Miller's Gulch and everything. So congratulations, and I'm encouraged by the progress there. It seems like we've come a long ways. We still have a long ways to go. But we both know that the main thing is going to have to happen south of the border. And I know the recycle, they have really good opportunities there from the waste treatment plants, because they have gravity opportunities of parks and use there. But are they also working on some short-term reductions now? It seems like the flow's been coming down.
Yeah, they also announced work that was completed in Tijuana that I didn't summarize. The Colector Poniente was replaced almost entirely for several miles. That work, unfortunately, was a significant source of the flows in the Tijuana River during the last 9 months. As they were working on that pipeline, flows were diverted to the river itself, of wastewater, rather than to segments of the Colector Poniente downstream. So that work has now been complete, and so a good portion of those flows are now being conveyed, as they should have been, to Pump Station 1, which then conveys the flows over the hill to San Antonio de los Buenos. They are still working on Colector Oriente, and that work is anticipated to continue for several months, and they have been doing pump station upgrades to Pump Station 1A and 1B and the PBCLA pump station. PBCLA has been operating, and so about 23 million gallons per day have been diverted from the river, and Pump Station 1B has been operating at least enough to get most of those flows over the hill to San Antonio de los Buenos. The fact that those two pump stations were damaged last November in the storms left us with the inability, us being collectively Mexico and the U.S., to divert those flows from the river at the one place where they could be diverted, which was PBCLA. So there have been some improvements, and CESP and CELA have been strenuous in their efforts to try to control illicit discharges. Nonetheless, it has been apparent that at night in particular, flows are increasing at the gauging station, and that is not clear why they're increasing it at night. So there does seem to be some discharging taking place up in the watershed that hasn't been tracked down yet. So we're a long ways away from a permanent solution, and it really calls forward the need to develop the 163 million gallon interception and diversion system in the U.S. to complement source control measures and system efficacy improvements in Tijuana. We're going to need that for a long time as Tijuana continues to grow. And so those efforts are long-term and short-term, and we're hoping to bring them together during the next year or so with EPA's report.
Dave, this is kind of an off-the-wall question, but will there be enough water in the City of San Diego's Pure Water Project that some would be available for sale to Tijuana?
That's a very interesting question.
I mean, I just don't know whether the City of San Diego wants to hold on to that with a tight fist or a tight valve or whatever the expression is, or if as they start it up, they wouldn't mind making some money and doing some good.
That's a very interesting question, Dr. Abarbanel. And I cannot answer for the city. I suspect that they will want to use all the water that they can treat and release to Miramar Reservoir and most likely Murray Reservoir. However, as we pointed out at the Reborder Conference last November, there's an opportunity with the City of San Diego's water recycling plant located right next door to the International Boundary and Water Commission to purvey recycled water north of the border to Otay Reservoir and south of the border to Rodriguez Reservoir. So there's an opportunity there for partnership internationally on water recycling. That treatment plant was intended to be used for the Pure Water Phase 3. And so the answer to your question may be yes, if that treatment plant's operated that way and that water is made available to Tijuana for sale. They certainly do need the water, and it may be a question of exchanging water for source control measures or some other tangible exchange between the City of San Diego and the City of Tijuana.
Okay. Is it within our purview to mention this to the City of San Diego? I mean, they have to decide. We don't decide.
Fortunately, we are well ahead of you on this. We have met several times with the mayor's office in the City of San Diego, talking about the South Bay Water Reclamation Plant in several ways. And so this idea of internationally shared recycled water is one of the questions that may be answered in the USMCA study, because they're looking at a number of factors. The most important of one to us, of course, is intercepting and diverting transboundary flows of waste. But long-term development of border water improvement plan projects and NADBANK projects in Tijuana could include water recycling. It could include water from the U.S. And it could even be that same water. After we've treated it at the border, making it available to Tijuana for use as a water supply could be one of the options that we consider going forward.
Okay. Thank you. All right. No other questions of our executive officer. Thank you, Dave. And the third item on our agenda is our usual future agenda items. for which we probably have no staff or money, but nonetheless, Kelly would love to hear your suggestions. I have one. It's not urgent, but it's part of what I asked Laurel, and that is, it's been a while since we had an update on implementing our statements on climate change or understanding what the new science in the last few years might have been. I don't know when to suggest that we do that, but maybe after if we wait until the end of COVID, that could be a year from now, who knows? But maybe we can have something at least informative at the end of this year. I gather, and Dave or Kelly, you can correct me, that the October and November meetings will be very busy, but I didn't hear whether December will be a major celebration of Hanukkah or something. I don't know.
Good morning, Board Chair and members of the board. My name is Kelly Dorsey. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer. It's a timely ask. In December, we're looking, I believe Dave's going to bring the updated practical vision to the board. Mm-hmm. And that will include a new chapter on climate change. So okay. There could be an opportunity at that point to discuss those types of things. So okay. I think it's a timely ask.
But I also suspect it's the soonest that we could hear about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Gary, are you raising your hands or okay? I really can't tell. I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing you, not just you, but anybody. All I see is hands waving and Eric turning on and off.
I got to remember not to scratch.
Scratching is definitely allowed, especially if you blank out the video. Okay. Thank you all. Thank you, Dave and Laurel. The next items on the agenda are 6 items on the consent calendar. Does anyone from the board or the public want to remove any of those items from the consent calendar? All right. Let's see. Catherine, we can pass these all at the same time, right?
That's correct.
So do we have a motion to pass the 6 items on the consent calendar, item 4 through 9?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Chris, do you want to read the roll? Was there anybody in the public who wanted to remove any item, or were we just... Okay, let's assume not for the moment.
Board Chair Barbanel, I do not see any hands raised at this time, but we can go ahead and poll the participants and remind them that if they wish to speak, they can go ahead and virtually raise their hand in Zoom or press *9 on their phone now. And I am still currently not seeing any raised hands at this time.
Okay, so let's proceed. I'm sorry, Chris, for interrupting.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye, Hardy, aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay. It's 10:15 almost. Let's have a 5-minute break and come back and consider the last item on the agenda, which is item 10, which will probably be a longer item. See you in 5 minutes, or not see you, or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, if you are?
I am.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I would like to present for your consideration today the operational plan for 2020-2021 and start off with some of our accomplishments from the last year in 2019 and 2020. As you know, we've been working assiduously on the Tijuana River issues, and among other things, we've issued an investigative order to the International Boundary and Water Commission, made substantial progress on the TMDLs and other efforts like Smuggler's Gulch that I described a few moments ago. There's much more, but I'll leave it to that for now. The board also adopted the first ever MPDS permit for the Pure Water Project for indirect potable reuse in a drinking water supply reservoir with the City of San Diego just earlier this year. And we've also implemented a Santa Margarita River estuary TMDL alternative to reduce eutrophication in the estuary itself. And you also adopted an investigative order to identify and quantify sources of fecal waste and their relative contribution in the San Diego River watershed. That project will take some years to execute and complete, but will be very important in addressing sources of fecal indicators that were brought up, for example, by Mr. Beenan this morning. And then we also held our first ever tribal summit at the San Diego Water Board on February 6th of this year. Now, you may recall in previous years that we have done a practical vision operations plan, and it was organized on a calendar year. This year, we are changing that now to a fiscal year. This gives our seniors and our managers the opportunity to compile and collate and make sure that our performance measures, which state board and EPA dictate, correspond to our workload on a fiscal year basis. You will also recall, sure.
Dave, we're not seeing your slides.
You're not.
I am not. At first I thought this was an intro. I just wanted to let you know we are not seeing your slides. Thank you.
Go back and try this again. We practiced this. Thank you for interrupting me. Can you see them now?
Yes, yeah. We can. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. We practiced this even beforehand. Our accomplishments. And one of the things we also added was the outreach event at the Earth Day Fair. And so here we are, Practical Vision Operations Plan. In previous years, as you've seen them, they were organized on a calendar year. We are now organizing them on a fiscal year for the reasons I mentioned. We are also organizing them on chapters of the Practical Vision. And we had a core regulatory section that was pulled out from the operations plan for the Practical Vision. Now we're going to be shifting, as I mentioned, to a fiscal year for planning and implementing the healthy water strategy that you adopted in Resolution R9-2017-0030, which set up our priorities in terms of outcomes and key beneficial uses in key areas. This is a significant change in our culture and our way of working that you will have a chance to see how we test drive it today. The key beneficial uses approach is included in Attachment 2 to the resolution that you're considering today, and it identifies, as you did, the key beneficial uses of healthy aquatic ecosystems, unimpaired fish and shellfish consumption, unrestricted recreation, and sustainable local water supplies. With each of those key beneficial uses in key areas, the priority setting team identified outcomes to be attained and strategies to achieve those outcomes in those watersheds. And this is how it looks schematically in Attachment 2 of the resolution. The key use here, aquatic healthy ecosystems, the key outcomes that we identified, ecologically balanced and sustainable communities of native organisms, and the net gain of wetland and riparian area quality. As both of these would indicate, we're not carving new ground necessarily or plowing new ground. These are issues we've long been working on under our practical vision. And now we're trying to organize them and focus them on the key beneficial uses for those areas. And so among the strategies are developing aquatic biological objectives for aquatic ecosystems, and also improving our approach to wetlands protection, implementing the regulations like the new definition and policy adopted by State Board on wetlands. For fish and shellfish consumption, we identified the key outcome is no adverse health effects from fish and shellfish consumption, and some of the key strategies to better improve our understanding of subsistence fishing, improve tissue concentrations below advisory levels, and control pollutants, most importantly, by implementing sediment quality objectives in actual cleanups that we're implementing and ordering. Now, I would stress here at this point that, as you may have guessed, the outcomes are not intended to be achieved in 1 year, nor are the strategies intended to be just a one-year project. These are, in many cases, multi-year projects, and we have a long horizon before we will be able to attain enough cleanups in the bay, for example, with SQOs to actually achieve no adverse health effects for fish and shellfish consumption. For unrestricted recreation, I want to draw your attention to the fact that we're looking really at two focal areas. One of them is the illness rates from bacterial indicators and pathogens that they represent, but the other is access by the public to the beach areas and other areas that may be affected by climate change. So Dr. Barbanal, you mentioned a few moments ago, I think, two key areas from climate change. One of them is to address the question of fires and how are they truly related? What is the scientific basis for that? So taking key regulatory actions to address climate vulnerabilities to REC 1 could be considered in one of those updates, but also engaging agencies and stakeholders in this issue. So we'll have the opportunity in the operations plan to bring these issues forward for your consideration or information as we go forward. So we're looking at this unrestricted recreation in two very different ways.
Dave, before we advance that slide, are you taking questions now or should we wait till the end?
Your pleasure.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me interrupt. The illness rate of 32 over 1,000, I guess, where does that come from? And sort of what kind of illnesses are incorporated? I mean, is that everything from a severe bacterial infection to, you know, a runny nose that you wouldn't anticipate in the middle of the summer? Can you sort of give us background? That's the first time I recall seeing that.
So that came from the new state board water quality objectives that the board adopted into the basin plan in March. And if you want some more information and details, by the end of the presentation, we'll queue up the staff who are working on these projects who could give you a better answer than I could on the fly.
Great. Thank you. That'd be good.
For sustainable local water supply, we're looking at the unrestricted use of groundwater basins, being able to achieve an increase in sustainable local water supplies, and also looking at the question of basin plan water quality objectives and beneficial uses. Are there impediments to the use of recycled water, like the ones we described a few moments ago in Tijuana? And so in Orange County, we've been working with the San Juan Basin Authority and the Santa Margarita Water District to look at the basin plan on issues there. They're in fact funding one of the positions in our office to do that so that we can make better use of groundwater basins with recycled water and perhaps surface water storage like the Trampas Reservoir. For the operations plan going forward for this fiscal year, we're proposing tentative resolution R9-2020-0215. And for healthy aquatic ecosystems, some of the key projects are the biological objectives that I mentioned a few moments ago, a Santa Margarita River TMDL to account balance the estuary TMDL alternative approach for nutrients and phosphorus, where we've addressed the estuary, the river remains an unresolved issue, and adopting the MPDS permit for the South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant in order to protect important ecosystems as well as communities downstream. Mentioned a few moments ago was the next generation monitoring efforts that we talked about. We're also looking at reviewing the biological beneficial use for some of our key waters to ensure that it is protective in those waters. Under aquatic ecosystems for wetlands protection, we'll be continuing our efforts to inform the public through workshops and through providing restoration assessment and incentives. It has become clear across the state that restoration projects sometimes face significant hurdles to advance. So we'll look at this question to see if there are ways for us to streamline restoration projects and enable them to go forward. We're also looking at streamlining 401 permitting in general so that small, less complicated projects don't have to wait for a very long period of time and meaningful projects can get the staff attention that they need in a shorter time frame. With the unimpaired consumption of fish and shellfish, as I mentioned, implementing the sediment water quality objectives, for example, throughout San Diego Bay, doing an assessment of the cleanup of work, and using the data approach that we've described in previous board meetings, like the divot table, for tracking pollutant reduction so that we can actually measure whether or not we're attaining the goals. As mentioned in our monitoring framework, question number four, are our management measures actually working? We'll continue the efforts that we described at the previous board meeting to do fish tissue analysis with SCORP, perhaps using SEP funds, and a unified San Diego Bay monitoring program. As I mentioned for the Tijuana River, where there are several efforts that are lifting off right now, there has long been substantial monitoring in San Diego Bay. We would like to try to unify those efforts again around our monitoring framework and some of our key questions. In recreation, well, there's Smuggler's Gulch, what it looks like today, for example. Just as I mentioned a few moments ago, we have the San Diego River Investigative Order that we'll be working on. It will be assembling essentially several models. One of the models, for example, addresses the source of fecal waste from homeless encampments like the one in the photograph below. The Tijuana River TMDLs are intended to protect the recreational beneficial use of Imperial Beach and San Ysidro, as well as the public's access and enjoyment of the Tijuana River Park in South Bay. The reissuance of the San Diego Regional MS4 permit, this would have been described previously as a core regulatory requirement, but as most of the stormwater co-permittees have addressed or identified the TMDL for bacterial indicators as their top priority, it's actually a good fit to describe here. That will be a very substantial lift of staff work during the coming year, and we would like to bring that to you for your consideration either next summer or next fall, depending on the number of factors that were in the public participation, as well as in the fact that we have staff reductions throughout the board and are likely to see more cutbacks in the next year. Regional pathogen monitoring, what we also described at the SCWRP item at the last board meeting, is an option for SEPs. And we're looking to designate and map vulnerable recreation and ecosystems areas that may be affected by climate change. Which beaches are we most likely to lose from shoreline erosion or inundation, for example? And how can we address that in the regulatory decision-making that we make, either under Section 401 permits for sand replenishment or in coastal retreat strategies or armoring strategies that may be proposed? How do we collate those? So among the items that you may consider in future board meetings may be a policy statement or even a basin plan amendment on coastal armoring. And there we would want to work closely with agencies like the Coastal Commission, Coastal Conservancy, and others to ensure that we can all work together and protect the beach areas rather than have them lost to erosion or inundation. Sustainable local water supplies. As I mentioned, there's several projects that are advancing. We're reviewing the basin plan impediments to supply augmentation. Potable reuse permits, we haven't seen the end of those. We have a significant one coming from Padre Dam and Helix, as well as others from Oceanside and Escondido. And we would still like to see the expansion of recycled water reuse effectively in our region where they can be. I think that that's a good point to point out at this point. As far as I know, right next door to us, a major development will occur, a redevelopment will occur at the SD for what would become the SDSU West campus. Yet it doesn't appear that they are planning anything like dual plumbing for recycled water reuse on the campus for flushing toilets. This is something that's done in Orange County, has been done, in fact, for many years. And there's an opportunity there to be realized for a significant redevelopment for the reuse of recycled water. There are others throughout the region. And so our staff are working with dischargers to try to make more recycled water actually reused rather than being sent out to the ocean outfalls. There are a number of issues that transcend one beneficial use. The climate adaptation implementations I've mentioned a couple of times here, developing coastal resiliency, as you have already adopted in several permits, there are a couple more remaining, MPDS plume tracking in ocean outfalls to evaluate the monitoring questions and the conditions in the receiving waters in the ocean. And not last at all, and not least, is employee wellness program. We want to make sure that our staff, particularly under these times, are able to manage their stress and their workload effectively and protect their health. So some of the things that we have done with our Seekers group and others, the Sustained, Empowered, and Energized Community staff group, is organizing after-hours beach walks and hikes and other events to try to maintain the connections that we used to take for granted by working in the office together and to ensure that we can all enjoy the beneficial uses we work so hard to protect. With all of that as prologue, I do recommend the adoption of the tentative resolution R9-2020-0215 for this practical vision operations plan for the coming fiscal year that we're in. And I would be happy to take your questions and ask our staff who've worked on these projects and describe them and define them themselves to be able to step up, for example, on the bacterial indicators question that Board Member Warren had a few moments ago.
Thank you very much, Dave. Okay. Does anybody have any questions to Dave?
Yeah.
Celeste? Eric, you're scratching again?
No, I'm raising my hand.
Oh, okay. After Celeste, then. Please.
So just to be clear, Dave, the vision that you're anticipating is net of the 5% reduction in staff that's dedicated to contact tracing and net of the staff that you think you won't be able to rehire due to budget reductions going forward.
Yes, Board Member Cantu, as things developed this summer, I asked the managers and the seniors to look back at the operations plan, which was in draft, and identify areas where we could extend timeframes or even delay the initiation of some of the projects that were proposed. We have a tendency of being enthusiastic and overeager to aim high, and this is a year, if ever, to be prepared for a long-term struggle with staffing. And so we, in fact, reduced the number of projects by about six. We extended timeframes on many of them. Some of these are ministerial efforts that we have to move forward because we have performance measures from State Board and EPA to satisfy, permits that do need to be considered. So we have sought to balance that workload across this fiscal year, expecting additional cutbacks and knowing where we already had shortages of staff. So we've tried to be much more realistic, and there may be a need at the mid-year to update you on progress on this and where we may have to make additional changes.
So what is the percentage reduction that you're operating with now? It seems like it must be approaching 20%. Is that accurate?
We're working on a 15% right now, and we've been told to expect a 5% cut next year, but we haven't been told when that 5% cut will actually be in effect. It may happen in January, where vacancies are made permanent or even taken away, or it may happen with the next fiscal year. There are a number of variables in this, including the potential for federal funding and relief for California. The fee issues that the State Board will consider next week will be very important in that formula. But we've tried to be realistic in this, and while we still have high aspirations, we tried to ground them with the resources we have on hand. So you'll see in their resolution, we're not even identifying all of the PYs. There's a lot of work which is not represented here that takes place in our office. Landfill inspections, for example, that we came up with and talked about a few moments ago. So we'll be looking for opportunities to achieve efficiencies through remote investigations and inspections as one of the ways to try to address the shortfall in staffing.
Thank you.
Okay. Board Member Warren had a question on bacterial indicators, and I wonder if Lori Walsh could step in and update us on the bacterial indicators, where the standard came from, and how we're implementing that.
After that, we'll go to Eric.
Good morning, Dave, members of the board. Yes, at this point, I have Dr. Helen Yu of my staff, who's very familiar with this issue, and she'd be happy to answer Board Member Warren's question. So go ahead, Helen.
Helen, you're on mute.
We're working our way through the process to get her to be able to.
There we go. Sorry.
Okay. Hello. Hi, Hello. This is Helen. WRC at the Stormwater Unit. Could Board Member Warren please repeat your question because I didn't hear it.
Sure. First, thanks for hopping on and allowing us to put you someone on the spot here at the last minute. The 32 over 1,000, I was just wondering sort of what kind of illnesses are encompassed in that standard, you know, what the spectrum would be. And obviously far over my skis here on this one, but that looked to me like a high incidence rate compared to what, you know, I'm familiar with, again, in a completely different world, but where we see different kinds of statistics exponentially smaller. So I just love a little bit more background on that.
All right, so that number comes from the US EPA 2012 criteria for the recommendations for the REC 1. And those illness rates include symptoms, for example, like the stomach cramps and also diarrhea. And those were the GI illness that were mostly considered into the 32 illness per 1,000 people. So some common symptoms, but are of less severe effects, like the earache, or maybe similar symptoms that is less severe, were not considered into the illness. But most of the 32 illness per 1,000 is about the GI illness, gastrointestinal illnesses. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does help explain it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Eric.
All right. My question is, you gave us an attachment that had the PYs all allocated for the operation plan. And I just might mention that 40 hours seems a little bit a small number for 1,000 ag plus operations to focus on. You barely get to review the paperwork for that. So I'm making that comment.
Yeah, thank you. As I indicated, this doesn't describe all the work that we're doing in the office. And so that, I believe, is planning work to coordinate. And we're doing other agricultural inspections as well that may not show up on this sheet.
And then, so then what is the total number of PYs that you're operating with more or less now to get the whole context?
We're under 64 PYs right now. We'll probably be short at least one by the end of the month when Rebecca Stewart retires.
Thanks.
This isn't as much, it's not a question, but a comment, Dave. I just wanted to commend you on the work or the proposed work on working with our counterparts at Coastal Commission and otherwise to come up with a coastal armoring plan. I think that's absolutely critical. I recognize it's not necessarily within our wheelhouse, but there's clearly overlap, and I look forward to working on that with you.
Yeah, this is a very interesting subject and likely to be controversial in parts of our region. And so I won't even venture into deeper waters at this point, but it's the sort of thing that we really wanted to accomplish with our practical vision and an outcomes-based approach to clearly identify the outcome that the public and the board wanted of its beneficial uses and how best to achieve that. And in some cases, that includes a balance against armoring certain bluffs that have a tendency to fail and unfortunately injure and kill people, but also being able to be sure we still have a beach to access. And if not an actual sand beach, then at least a cobbly beach. Even that is still enjoyable when it comes to surfing or recreating. But where there are opportunities for sand replenishment projects to become restoration projects, we have sought that. And in fact, I noticed in the State Board agenda item that they have taken one of our recommendations into consideration, which is to restructure the fee for sand replenishment projects so it's far more affordable. I hope affordable enough for municipalities like Coronado and others to actually do those projects. Right now, the 401 certification fee is really quite large. And so we've suggested the State Board and those agencies that they view this as a restoration and as a shoreline enhancement for protection for climate change and sea level rise, not just as a construction project. So that seems to be pending right now before the State Board. If the fee's been adjusted enough to really make those projects more viable, I'm not clear. But we also have to balance that against our ability to then execute work on the 401s. And right now, that is one of several areas that were critically underfunded.
So Dave, if I can make a statement on that, which it's, I'm representing sort of coastal cities in this regard. All of the cities, at least in the San Diego region, and I gather throughout California, have been severely impacted by the economic downturn. They've lost 20 or 30% of their budget. They've either furloughed or had to lay off personnel. And they probably don't even have the generosity of the state board goals. They don't have the money to meet those fees for the replenishment. So one shouldn't hope or be upset by a lack of success. It isn't for trying to compliment the state board and just tell you how impoverished the coastal cities are feeling, and realistically so. So yes, that may be something that doesn't take any particular effect until next year or the year after. But if they start now, things will look a lot better as they proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're taking the long view on many of these projects, and the fee reduction is only one front in that particular discussion. Mm-hmm. We've also been looking at a programmatic waste discharge requirements that the cities could enroll in, which might, again, save them money and might make their application process even more efficient, so that each city doesn't have to submit their own application and work it through with their own limited resources. They could apply for enrollment, much like we did with the boatyards permit. So there's some opportunities there for us to realize some efficiencies going forward that we're very sensitive to the needs and the times that we face, but our longer term vision of protecting our beneficial uses.
Right. No, I think it's a realistic approach. And I think we ought to send out smiley faces to all the city managers that they can post on their monitors, because it's tough times. Betty? Okay.
So I wanted to talk about the ability to recycle water. And a project is coming to completion in South Orange County. It's called the Trappist Reservoir. And it holds 5,000 acre feet of recycled water, which allows the utility to have 100% recycled water. But when I say 100% recycled water, you have to understand you can't recycle every drop, so that it's probably 92% or something along that nature. Now, I don't know how many storage projects or if it's possible to have storage projects, but before this occurred, the demand for recycled water is very high in the summer, but there isn't demand in the winter. And so by having storage facilities, it means that you can take your winter flow and store it and then use it over the drier periods of the year. And I wanted to mention also, the state revolving fund has been monumentally important. So I kind of had two points with this. Can the state revolving fund be used like for wetland restoration? And is there some type of nexus that could occur for it to be used in terms of armoring the beaches?
As I understand from the state board's priorities that they set for that fund, and that fund, while it wasn't utilized heavily in the past, is vastly oversubscribed right now. Those types of projects would not be considered. They're looking at really in the pipe water recycling projects and wastewater augmentation projects. They're not looking at wetlands restoration or shoreline armoring for that fund at this time. Maybe. There are other opportunities, other funding sources. And I think that your earlier points are absolutely ones we would take into consideration with the items that we bring to you for consideration in the future.
Can Lori answer that question? Because I heard that the state revolving fund had money. So if that's not correct.
It has money, but it has many, many more proposals for how to spend that money than there is money available right now, as I understand it.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. That gave me more information.
Gary?
Yeah, this is kind of a small little semantic comment. But in our area with our historic concern for wetlands and some of the political attacks on that definition and all of our ephemeral streams, I'm wondering, and I noticed in your brief you actually covered wetlands, but under aquatic habitats, would it make sense to include riparian habitat in there so that we can make it clear that we're not just, you know, even if there isn't water there, it's still a priority for us to maintain and monitor those habitats, or am I being too picky?
No,
I'll just leave that as an open comment.
No, you're not at all, Board Member Strawn. I was economical in my language. That chapter three of our practical vision includes riparian ecosystems as well as your conventional freshwater or saltwater wetlands.
Okay.
And so in order to fit it on the slide, I simply shortened the title. And indeed, the ephemeral channels are really very important in our region. For one thing, they have a tendency to shift back and forth as climate changes. Presumably, it's going to tend to be much drier more often. But we do have periods where we have several wet years in a row where those streams really rebound and provide the beneficial uses of cold or warm that the ecosystem depends on. So they act as refugia during certain years where in an important source of sediment sorting and cleaning and nutrient recycling. So those systems, even the ephemeral ones, are really important to our region, especially since they comprise a large percentage of our riparian drainages.
Yeah, I'm always blown away with places like Boulder Creek that can be just bone dry for 9 months, and you go back 3 weeks later and there's a active population of aquatic insects and even the trout, and I don't know where they hang out, but they make it back in there. So, you know, people that drive by and see that's just a dirt ditch, you know, that doesn't need to be maintained or missing how important those are to our local environment. So thank you.
Indeed, in some cases, restoration is really possible and you get remarkable results. The Campo Reservation, for example, did restoration work on Campo Creek in several areas, and they actually restored it from being a dry sandy wash to a perennial stream in the course of several years through the construction of selective weirs and through the exclusion of livestock grazing, where it was historically practiced and denuded the ecosystem. So they were able to restore what was then an ephemeral stream to a perennial stream. So there are opportunities to address past damages in riparian systems. And that is also one of the reasons why we want to facilitate restoration projects rather than burden them with the bureaucratic red tape and the number at the Baskin-Robbins, which is 3 digits, while everyone else has a 2 or 1 digit number. We don't want them to wait for a long, long period of time before they can go forward. They often have very limited funding. The funding is available for 2 or 3 years, not 5 years. And if it takes us a year to get the project certified, they've lost critical time for the actual work. So we're looking at this from several key directions.
Thank you.
Okay, it looks like we're finished with that. Dave, would you be so kind as to mail out to the board members the presentation that you showed us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So, Board Chair, I just want to confirm, Board Member Anderson has his hand up on Zoom. I just want to confirm that he doesn't to add anything.
No, I'm lowering my hand now. Well, maybe is now a good time to make a motion to approve the and adopt R9-2020-20215.
Yes. You've taken the board and the numbers Barbanel out of my mouth. So,
Board Chair Barbanel, if it pleases the board, we can see if any of the members of the public wish to speak on this item.
Good point. Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome. Just as a reminder, anyone who wishes to speak on this item can please virtually raise their hand in the Zoom or press *9 on your phone now. And if we see anybody, we will call you out. Currently, I am not seeing anybody raising their hand. No hands have been raised.
So I'll entertain a motion on this resolution. I can read the whole number again. Here we are. Tentative resolution number R9-2020-0215. We have a motion to approve this tentative resolution.
We have a motion. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Chris, would you call the roll?
Mr. Anderson.
A resounding aye.
Ms. Cantu.
Aye.
Dr. Olson.
Aye.
Mr. Strawn.
Aye.
Ms. Warren.
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel.
Aye. Thank you very much, Dave and board.
Thank you.
That is the end of the agenda that I know of, unless there are any other items. I will say keep safe. We'll see you next month, and have a good, safe afternoon as well.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, all.